For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website. Good evening. Oh, so, we are a little more than halfway through our practice commitment period right now, which has been going from the beginning of April until the end of this month. And we've been studying together sort of the six major bodhisattva figures in our Zen Mahayana tradition. And tonight, I'm going to follow up on sort of a continuation to Taigen's talk on Kshitagarbha, or Jizo, who, as we typically refer to this bodhisattva. And I want to talk sort of more specifically tonight about, you know, how we can practice with some of the practices of Jizo. And I'll kind of give a brief little, reminder overview and maybe an overview for people who weren't able to listen to the first talk. But Kshitagarbha is one of the primary bodhisattvas and comes to us through primarily a sutra based on his name, which is the Earth Womb or Earth Storehouse Bodhisattva Sutra. And his Sanskrit name literally means earth. Could be translated as earth treasury or earth storehouse or earth matrix or earth womb, and this bodhisattva has taken on a great importance in many, primarily Asian cultures. In Japan, he's called Jizo Bosatsu. In China, his name is Dizong. In Korea, it's Jijong Bosal. And there's even a Theravadan version of sort of a Jizo archetype or image. There's the bhikkhu Phra Malai, who was an arhat who developed supernatural powers, descended to hell and to teach and comfort suffering beings. And that is very similar to what the bodhisattva that we know as Jizo does. Jizo Bodhisattva, and I'll continue to refer to him as Jizo, is the bodhisattva who takes responsibility for all beings in the six realms until the Buddha of the future, Maitreya, comes back to be the Buddha in our world. And from Taigen's talk, you may remember that the six realms are sort of the three higher realms, and then there's three lower realms. The three higher realms include the realms of heavenly beings who are not really suffering very much, but they're not in nirvana because they're still suffering because they have something to lose. You know, they have this ease and calm and happiness, and they could lose that, and that's part of what causes their suffering. Then they're sort of slightly below them are the asuras, or the fighting gods, the warrior-like gods, and beings that have a lot of power and enjoyment, but are constantly sort of vying for that power, vying to prove who's the greatest. And then slightly below that are the human realm, where we typically live. Although these realms, they're thought of as, sort of cosmological realms, but also psychological realms. So in the human realm, we have just enough suffering, just enough ease so that we can practice, and just enough suffering so that we maybe need to practice. And below that would be the animal realm, which is, characterized by beings who don't have as much conscious sort of free will and choice. They're more sort of constrained by their biology and instinct. And below that, there are the hungry ghosts, who are beings who they're suffering because they just cannot get enough. They're depicted as sort of beings with hugely bloated bellies and tiny necks, and they're always starving, but they can never take in enough. And so that is a psychological realm that we can get ourselves into at different times as well. And then finally, at the bottom, there are the hell realms, where beings are really just suffering in sort of a constant way. And Jizo came about. There are a number of stories around Jizo that I will not get too deeply into, but Jizo, his vow is that he will go into the hell realms and be there with suffering beings. And Jizo vows to remain in the hell realms until all suffering beings have been liberated. And he helps partly by helping just bear witness to the suffering of those beings in the hell realms, but also tries to, you know, offer them some teaching and some comfort so that they can remove themselves or be liberated from the hell realms. And so, you know, each of the names that I sort of translated for Jizo starts with Earth. So, you know, it's related to Jizo's name as Earth Womb or Earth Storehouse. Jizo for us is sort of regarded as the Bodhisattva of the underworld, or the intermediate state between births, between death and between birth. And so Jizo has a lot to do with both suffering beings in these realms and beings who are in some sort of transition, and I'll get into that in a moment. But as I said, Jizo vows to remain in the hell realms until all beings are liberated from these realms. Jizo bears witness, and that's one of the characteristics, traits of Jizo, is that he really bears witness to suffering beings by staying with them. He's, I think, you know, a very accessible bodhisattva and is a source of personal comfort for people in many situations, in many cultures. And Jizo, I think, is some of the major bodhisattvas can appear in a way that seems, you know, sort of magical and splendorous and a little bit intimidating, like Avalokiteshvara with 1,000 arms, with, you know, eyes in every hand and able to, you know, sort of work in lots of different ways and hear the cries of the world. Jizo hears the cries of the world, but he hears them because he's sitting right here next to you. And Jizo, when he's typically depicted, is a very humble-looking, you know, bald-headed monk with sort of almost like a childlike face, which maybe reflects another aspect of Jizo, which is that, as I'll get into in a moment, Jizo is often invoked for sort of the bodhisattva of children and women and children. When we are in the kitchen, you might notice that we have a print on the back wall above the table, and that is actually a statue depicting Jizo. Jizo's typically depicted with a staff, and the staff, you know, like a hiking staff, only the staff for Jizo has six sort of metal rings at the top that jangle, and the six rings are supposed to represent the six realms, and you can sort of hear Jizo as he walks, because he, you know, moves his staff and it sort of rings. And Jizo is also, with the other hand, is typically depicted carrying a wish-fulfilling gem. And that is another way that Jizo sort of offers comfort and also light. There's sometimes, you know, there's sort of light emitting from this gem as a way of, you know, bringing some light to beings. So I mentioned that Jizo bears witness, and I think that there are, in our contemporary society, we have a number of occupations or roles that are maybe sort of similar to the ways in which Jizo bears witness. We have, social workers and therapists, maybe rescue workers, chaplains, hospice workers, people who protest, personal injustice, people who maybe work with children who have been abused or who are suffering. And these are ways in which, in our modern times, we might be bearing witness to painful situations. And actually, in our very recent times, I think anybody with a cell phone camera who pulls that camera out and starts, recording, situations of injustice or brutality, it could be considered to also be, sort of taking on a Jizo function of bearing witness and helping, helping us gain awareness of the suffering so that we can attend to it. But traditionally in Japan, Jizo is thought of, as I mentioned a moment ago, as a bodhisattva for women and children, that he plays a role in helping beings through situations of birth and death and all the transitions in between. And many statues of Jizo commemorate children who have died. You'll see sometimes in graveyards, sort of a typical grave, and then right next to it a statue of Jizo. And similar to this, actually, people will also sort of invoke Jizo in situations where a being has died as a result of miscarriage or abortion. And different from, I think, kind of our culture, I don't think it's that abortion is more socially acceptable, but it is a very common practice in Japan. And most people do still keep this private. It still engenders feelings of shame or guilt, but one thing that has, that has developed culturally in Japan through Buddhism is the idea of the mizuko, or water baby, which is any infant that has died as a result of miscarriage or abortion. And Buddhist traditions have developed a mizuko kuyo ceremony, which honors the spirit of the deceased infant and helps lift the weight of the feelings that, potential parents have gone through as a result of what has happened. It's thought to sort of ease the suffering of the beings who are here and helps these children move on to a new birth. And the ceremony would involve chanting the Heart Sutra, maybe venerating Mizuko Jizo, who is holding a staff, but he's holding a little baby instead of a jewel. And so you may see statues of Jizo, Mizuko Jizo, in a graveyard or in a temple yard. And people might offer incense or toys or food for the spirit of the child to help the child on its way to a new rebirth. So this is one way that Jizo maybe serves to help protect or take care of women and children. Another way is from the Earth Store Bodhisattva Sutra. Jizo is venerating Jizo is thought to bring 28 benefits to those who make offerings in his name, including having a happy family, having rebirth in the heavens, relieving the suffering of one's deceased ancestors, and women who wish will be reborn as men, and women who like being women will be reborn as daughters of kings and ministers, which can sound, a little, I don't know, it can, to sort of our American feminist ears, that can sound a little funny, but in earlier times, women were in very, very vulnerable situations. And many women in our culture today and in other cultures today are still in very vulnerable situations where they do not have necessarily the autonomy and resources to take care of themselves. And so this was one way women to be protected in a way that they could be reborn as men, or they could be protected in by having a more fortunate female birth. So this is one way that Jizo protects women. Jizo also protects travelers. And another one of the many, the 28 benefits that might come from making offerings to Jizo is that travelers will always arrive at their destinations. So I think transition is maybe a common theme of areas where Jizo might intervene in people's lives. Travel, birth, death, all of whom can benefit from Jizo's protection. And so, you know, this is a little taste of how Jizo functions in Japanese culture. But I think that, you know, an important part of developing an American Buddhist tradition is finding ways to, approach some of these traditional figures and practices within our own culture. And so I want to talk a little bit about, you know, how we can make, practicing with Jizo something that feels personally relevant in our own lives. One of the significant sources of sort of understanding Jizo in the U.S. comes from Great Vow Monastery, which is in Oregon, which is literally named after Jizo's great vow to witness suffering and liberate those in the hell realms and to protect beings. Great Vow was co-founded somewhere between 15 and 20 years ago by Jan Chosen Bays, whose interest in Jizo relates to actually being born on the day that the U.S. dropped the bomb on Nagasaki. Chosen is a pediatrician who actually has expertise in child abuse assessment, and I think, I don't know which came first. I think that this is, Jizo has felt like a very relevant figure in her life, and she has written a book on Jizo Bodhisattva, which describes a lot of traditions around Jizo elsewhere, as well as how we might practice with Jizo here. So citing the Earth Store Bodhisattva Sutra, Chosen writes on how practicing with Jizo can help us to end suffering for ourselves and for others. We understand that we suffer because of being born into bodies that experience old age, sickness, death, and the ways that we try to hold on and avoid these things. And we also suffer because of our own greed, hatred, or aversion and delusion or ignorance. And so these are things that we need to sort of practice with and work with to find a way to transform in our lives. And according to the Earth Store Bodhisattva Sutra, we are all actually transformation bodies of the one body of compassion. Transformation bodies means, kind of how the ways in which that compassion has been, kind of manifested in the particulars of our lives. And as we care for those who suffer, including ourselves who suffer, we are becoming Earth Store Bodhisattva. So Chosen has done a few things in particular to work with bringing the image of Jizo Bodhisattva to our times and our lives. One of which was in 2005. Great Vow started something called the Jizos for Peace Project, in which they started making panels, cloth panels of pictures depicting Jizo Bodhisattva in various situations. And they started doing it. The word sort of traveled to different sanghas or different community groups around the U.S. And ultimately, they I don't think they really made it into a patchwork quilt, but it became a very large panel that got sort of sewn together of 334,000 Jizo images, which were kind of put together to and were sent to the city of Nagasaki to commemorate the 60th anniversary of the bombing of Nagasaki, and as sort of an apology, which was very much appreciated and by the people of Nagasaki, who were very touched by this. They sort of said, you know, no one has ever actually apologized for this. And we actually participated in this. There, if you go to the photo section of the website, you'll see sort of, and this may, if you've ever been there and have wondered, what are these photos of? This is, there are some photos of various people in the Sangha making panels for this project. And it felt, I remember at the time, you know, it really felt like we were taking part in something that was, you know, turned out to be so much bigger than we realized. But so in doing that, just in creating these, you know, these Jizo images and sort of making an offering of them, that was a way to help repair some of the suffering that was caused and that still lives on among people here and there. Great Vow also does a number of things to sort of support themselves as a monastery, one of which is they make sort of little personal, you know, Jizo figures, and they sell them to support the monastery. And when I was out there, I bought one and brought it home, which is how I happened to have my own personal Jizo. And which I will send around. And this is a very classic Jizo with a wish-fulfilling gem. Many Jizo figures look just like this. It's a little bit childlike looking, and a little, you know, just sort of a little bit innocent. And this is something that you know, can just sort of be on my home altar as a little way of remembering Jizo. You can send him around. So that leads me into talking about ways of practicing with Jizo Bodhisattva. And there are a number of ways that we can work with this. One would be simply to chant the name of Jizo Bodhisattva, which can remind us of Jizo's presence and help us feel that sense of, you know, sort of calm witnessing in situations where we're more agitated or suffering or experiencing difficulty. So you could say, you know, Namo Kshita Garbha Bodhisattva, which is something along the lines of I take refuge in Jizo Bodhisattva. You could say I take refuge in Jizo Bodhisattva. You could, there's a sort of a Jizo Dharani, which is like a mantra to Jizo, and you could, you know, recite that sort of repeatedly, and it goes Om Ka Ka Kabisan Ma E Soa Ka. Om meaning sort of, you know, invoking the awareness of absolute perfection and peace. Ka, which is the sort of a seed syllable representing Kshita Garbha. And then soaka, or means svaha. It's sort of the Japanese version of svaha, meaning so be it or may it endure. And this chanting om ka ka kabisan mai soaka over, you know, repeatedly can help to develop a little bit of a meditative state. It gives our brains something to hold on to calm down. And Chosen recommends that it actually helps to use syllables that don't typically hold an association for us, as if you were to chant a word that you know in English, we tend to then develop associations and our mind goes off in that direction. But having something that we don't have an association to can help us to calm down a little bit and just help our brains to settle so that we can sort of open our minds and relax a little bit. We also can practice ourselves with vows, which is one of the paramitas associated with Jizo. We all make vows at different points in our lives. Anybody think of a vow that you've made at some point? Anybody want to just shout one out? Vows are personal, huh? Maybe they are. Some, I think, you know, when I think of vow, I can be hesitant to make a vow because I don't want to get caught having broken it. And I think, because I think of vows as like permanent, like I'm going to do this from here on out. And I don't think vows have to be that way. Some are, right? But other vows could be, you know, even something like for the practice commitment period, I vow to sit zazen, you know, 5 days a week. Or, you know, I vow to come on to Ancient Dragon on Monday nights for the duration of the practice commitment period. It's good to be, you know, kind of clear about what our vows are, and you know, to maybe as a way of extending ourselves without taking on too much and biting off more than we can chew. We actually, there are those who say that we have already made vows that we're not really conscious of, such as, you know, we can find them in our personal tendencies, like needing to be first, or, you know, we can have sort of some negative vows, like nobody's going to get, you know, the better of me. And it's when we don't notice our vows, we tend to be caught by them a lot more. And I think it part of one thing that we can practice with is noticing those vows that we've made for ourselves, like, you know, I have to be first. And we can maybe start to work with them, like maybe like, okay, for this week, I'm going to practice with, you know, letting other people go first, or I'm going to practice with, you know, being the last one on the bus, or, you know, that kind of thing. So vows can also propel us into practice, like when we're in the practice commitment period and we, you know, make a vow to do something for a particular time. Vows can also extend across lives. You know, we maybe some other being will pick up our own vow when we've passed on. We've sort of, you know, made a vow to do something in this lifetime, and maybe, you know, as we are sort of passing that along, someone else will pick it up. So when we call upon Jizo, we can really call upon, you know, the power in ourselves that helps us to fulfill our life's purpose. And so maybe in thinking about, you know, what are we here for, that's a way of discerning, you know, a vow that you may have made to yourself or to others. So there are some traditional times when people might call upon Jizo, such as when facing sickness or death, or on behalf of other people who are facing sickness and death. That might be a time to, you know, reach out for Jizo's assistance. When a child is born or during pregnancy, calling upon Jizo can be a way of finding some calm and some reassurance in an uncertain situation. And similarly, when traveling, you know, it can help to, Jizo can help to ease the anxiety of transitions. And also, surprisingly, when we have difficulty remembering, sort of invoking the power of Jizo can sort of help calm our mind so that, you know, maybe we can sort of calm down enough to remember something. And finally, I think we can, you know, maybe think about practicing with some of the qualities that have been attributed to Jizo. Qualities such as Jizo's compassion and benevolence, or optimism and lack of fear, unflagging vow, commitment and determination, Jizo's ethical conduct that's sort of part of his responsibility for beings, finding, you know, some equanimity similar to Jizo, or just having sort of an active engagement in everyday life. These are all qualities that we might, you know, make a vow to try to develop and practice. And then look for opportunities to continue to refine our practice and skillfulness. And so this is, you know, one way that we might sort of work with some of the aspects of a particular bodhisattva in determining how we want to, you know, kind of work with our practice in our lives. So I think that's probably all I'm going to say. But maybe we can. Maybe it's time for discussion or questions about Jizo, or any questions anybody has about anything really. David.
The question comes to mind right away. Can you talk a little bit about the differences between Avalokiteshvara, Tatsuya, and Jizo? I see them as similar but different.
Yeah.
Where I'm really getting Tatsuya hears everything. And he's extended compassion. Jizo is very focused.
Yeah.
Can you speak to that just a little bit?
You know, I feel the same way, and the things that I have sort of studied about them are differences, but they sometimes feel like, in terms of sort of these particular qualities, the differences don't seem so extreme. I mean, Avalokiteshvara is a different bodhisattva and is the bodhisattva of compassion. And to me, can feel a little bit more like a distant. Jizo always feels a little bit more approachable to me. So you're right that Avalokiteshvara is also, venerated in for especially when we're really suffering or in need of help. You know, we have the universal gateway of Kanzeon where. Those who, invoke the name of Kanzeon will be relieved from their suffering. And I think that for me, the distinction is that Jizo is kind of right here. Kanzeon always feels like Kanzeon is a little bit farther away. Yeah, but I don't know that really is a distinction. You know, just that's more how it feels to me. Other people have thoughts about that? Anybody? Oops. Thank you.
It seems to me that each of the bodhisattvas that we've studied has a different flavor of compassion that's there, a different way of expressing compassion. And what the impression that I've gotten is that Avalokiteshvara is active in the moment, that Avalokiteshvara notices when beings are suffering and then responds immediately with whatever it is that can help relieve their suffering. Well, Jizo Bodhisattva relieves suffering by being there and witnessing it, which sometimes is what you need. You don't need somebody to give something to you or do something for you. You just need somebody to see you and to see your suffering, and that by itself is really powerful.
Yeah.
And so from what you and Taigen have said, that's for me is what the kind of compassion that Jizo represents.
Yeah. Avalokiteshvara is sort of characterized too by skillful means, that he has a tool sort of for everything. And Jizo, I think, is more characterized by just the effort and commitment to sort of sticking with you through the situation and doing, whatever you is needing to be done immediately. Yeah.
The thing that comes to mind to me thinking about Jizo is this new museum about lynching and the history of lynching in this country that's opening, and it's such an important thing for us to bring that to our awareness and bear witness. Murderous violence that was for so long just not talked about, just pretended it didn't exist, and it was so real for the people that endured it, but not real for other people. And when you said that they made a beautiful tapestry, or something. I mean, it just seemed like something to acknowledge or to, it seems like a very Jizo thing to do to make that place.
Yeah.
And there are actually some people who are very much against it because it's hard. It's a hard thing to
from what I have read, even just going to the museum gives you a very visceral experience through the sort of way that it's designed of what it's like to, you know, be in a lynching. And I can't even really imagine, you know, what it's like to even go to the museum. But there, you know, you brought up something that I did want to talk about and kind of just slipped my mind, but there are so many things that we can do only limited things about in this world, and yet it is important to not turn away from them. You know, we may not be able to resolve them just yet, but I think it's important to sit with that and to not turn away from, you know, homeless people that we encounter in our daily lives, to, you know, starving polar bears, or, you know, all kinds of injustices, whether it's against, you know, other people, other beings, or the planet. It's important that we take that in, and I think that's one reason why we might call upon Jizo to help us as we bear witness. I saw someone's hand. Was it Matt or Dave? Oh, Jan.
About 7 or 8 years ago, I think I've discussed this here before. I hope I'm not repeating myself too much. I made a document that is about 12 pages long, and it's in 9-point type, and it's 3 columns per page, and it's the list of people who were lynched. So the number is prodigious.
Wow. Wow.
And at some point, Ida B. Wells went to Europe, mm-hmm. and she shamed the United States into stopping the lynching because it was such a scandal in Europe, and that, you know. And so here in the United States, we stopped lynching. And ever since then, there's been force or some sort of energy that has gone into repeating that injustice. And, you know, I have presented my list to people, you know, the list is enough to make you cry.
Yeah.
And when I present this list to people, they're very interested because there are so many people who have been killed since then and killed unjustly or put into prison in solitary confinement or, you know, punished for being black for one reason or another. Or, I think mostly black. But I just wanted to affirm what Laurel talked about, because it's been something in my experience for such a long time to recognize that this has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the idea of bearing witness, or being like Jizo, just to bear witness when there's really nothing we can do about it.
Okay.
But we can still do something
about what's happening now. Mm-hmm. So that sounds to me like the difference between these two. Well, it's also, you know, kind of the turning away and touching are both wrong. We can't necessarily do something, but we at least need to not turn away.
Yeah.
And to bear it in mind. So thank you. I hadn't heard you say that before. I wasn't aware of it. Suzanne.
When you just said turning away and touching news, when you chanted that tonight, when I'm thinking about the lynching museum and bearing witness, I keep thinking about the idea that lynching was a public spectator. So I'm not sure what bearing witness and turning away. There's something in there with Jizo that that's really complex and nuanced. What is it?
Well, we could think of Jizo as witnessing the witnesses in that situation.
Or which?
You know, are witnesses complicit? It kind of brings up the question of are witnesses complicit, but...
And just which part of human nature is that? Where are the other threads of it?
Yeah. Something that can help. I think that's what I've appreciated about people, you know, posting their cell phone videos of brutality, and that it is a way of, you know, bringing attention to a situation that maybe does help. Yeah.
And so he's not some kind of exalted figure. He gets his feet muddy, he goes down to hell, and bears witness, he goes also to the heavens. You know, so like, what does that mean? So I don't know, I've been trying to think about like getting your feet muddy, and especially in a situation like that, or that context.
So, yeah, that's a good aspect too. David?
Trying to address something that you said in Chapman's work that I've done, sometimes the greatest thing to do is just to be there to bear witness. And the sense of connection and the sense of being there for somebody else and supporting them as they die is just a whole different feeling. There's nothing I can do about it. They're going to die. It's going to happen. And all I can do is just be there with them. And sometimes I think in our own, when we look at society, we feel like, oh, we can help do something. But sometimes the greatest thing we can do is bear witness. And that means also bearing witness for people who are lynching the poor guy, bearing witness to their own sense of powerlessness. That's one of the most emotionally, in a certain way, I noticed the medical director of the hospice I worked with saying, we're getting joy out of people dying. It seems strange, but it was just so emotionally satisfying to be with people and just to bear witness. You know, it's funny because I look at Ishvara for a long time, a venerator. And it's something to do, what you just said, Matthew. You know, she's enrolled in your venerator. And Jesus seems so much more accessible than what I'm talking tonight. It's just like hitting like a ton of bricks, personally. Just very witness. And the most beautiful thing you can do, the most human thing you can do.
Thanks. Helena.
You can talk about any. Moral injury. I've heard that called moral injury when someone allows these situations to just pass them by because they're turning a blind eye to that suffering, or they're complicit in that suffering because of their own suffering, of ignorance, of injustice, of all of it. So I think by bearing witness like Jizo and acknowledging the suffering that goes into the people that are complicit. Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of rounding out everything that everyone's saying here, but that really hits me as well. Like, I can feel it in my heart when I'm talking about it. Like, that physical feeling of almost like your stomach in your throat, thinking about the people that were there watching something like that, or are still. It's a heavy emotional weight, but not allowing that moral injury to let us turn away either.
Yeah. One thing that you're both reminding me of that we all can do is to be with others as they tell their stories of things that they've gone through, and help them and offer them space in which to tell their story, help them to tell their story, allow them to tell their story, and just be there with the suffering, so that we aren't turning our backs or committing a moral injury. Jan, I think maybe we have time for just your last comment.
The Grimke sisters were both Southern girls, and their mother had 14 children at least, and it was on a plantation, and they were white. And when they were little, they were allowed to play with the slave children. But there was a point at which, one of the slave children would do something wrong and would get beaten. And the older sister, I think her name might have been Caroline, she went to her mother and said, "My little friend, they hit him." And her mother said, "Oh, well, he's a black child and he doesn't feel it like you do." And later on, Angelina came along, and the same thing happened with her. And she didn't go to the mother, she went to her sister. And her sister said, "Yeah, it's a terrible wrong." And those two sisters ended up being in Massachusetts. And they moved away from the South. And Angelina was the first person to the first female to give a speech in the Massachusetts state legislature. And her speech, of course, was about how wrong slavery was. To me, this line from the Precious Mirror Samadhi that you brought up, turning away and touching are both wrong. There are times when touching is the thing you need to do. It's just, I really like that story about the Grimke sisters.
Yeah. You are talking about something that I'm, kind of aware is very American. This is sort of totally interwoven into the history of our culture. And, part of what I would like to see us continue to work out is how we find ways to bring, our Zen teachings to these very American cultural situations. And I appreciate, kind of the conversation that we're starting to have tonight about that. Because that's I think part of what helps Zen really be more relevant to our lives, that as Buddhism has kind of transferred from culture to culture, it is transformed in some ways by some of the aspects of that culture, and I think this is maybe one of the central areas in which we can work to heal some of the wounds that we have in this culture by talking about them and practicing with them and continuing to remember them and to touch when appropriate and to just not turn away. So thank you for that.